Alrighty, well, welcome to the Identity Implementers Working Group call this morning. I'm glad you all could make it. Let's go ahead and get started. Let's see, the first order of business, I will put the link to the wiki page in the chat for everyone to find, to follow along, and also to sign the attendees list. If you could do that, that helps us know who's attending and be able to reach you in the event that we need to. My name is Steve McCown. I'm your moderator for today. Just to get started, the antitrust policy. This is a industry cooperation of lots of different people that have their own respective companies and proprietary work that they do, but we get together to talk about those things that are of mutual interest, and so that we can collaborate on things that are open and public. And so anything that's proprietary or patent protected or things like that, if you could keep that out of the call. But then anything that is of public interest, we welcome the discussion and all of your input. So to get started, are there is anyone new that hasn't been here before that would like to introduce themselves?
Hi, Steve. This is Bart Kant. I'm new to this group. And my background is in consulting services, mostly financial services. And I am the founder of a startup, or Rethink Ledgers, that's focused on ledger tech, verifiable credentials, and also DAML programming.
Excellent. Welcome. It's good to have you. Whereabouts are you located?
I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Excellent. Well, welcome to the Implementers Working Group today. Thank you. Anyone else? All right, we'll get going. We have some interesting discussion today. We will start with the announcements. So we have an interopathon coming up here in, I believe, September. I don't have the exact date offhand. Stephen Curran, are you on the call?
I am. September 1st and 2nd. So this call is focused on Indy and getting interoperability across networks, so achieving the network of networks. The use case is that I have received verifiable credentials as a holder from issuers that are using different Indy networks. I would like to be able to construct a proof using those, using claims from those credentials, a single proof using claims from those different credentials, and have a verifier be able to verify that, and to do that seamlessly so that the clients would be able to find the underlying materials necessary to both prove and verify those the claims, even though they're on different networks. That's not possible today, or not easy today, and we want to figure out what the steps are and get in action the coding and changes necessary to make that user story possible. So that's what it's about. It's got broader implications than that, because it talks about resolution of objects within a wallet. It talks about how DID methods might be used for that. So it's got a bunch of interesting attributes to it, and hopefully it's a small enough that we can achieve our goal, which is at the end of those 2 days, we know exactly what development is needed, and we can get people pointing at specific backlog items to code, implement, and release.
Excellent. That is much needed, and I'm looking forward to that. I know we have the general Indy ledger that's available through Sovereign, and then we have several implementations of separate instantiations of that ledger, and it would be nice to make them all be able to communicate better. I have put the, there's a link to the Interopathon page, if I can say that correctly. And I put that in the announcements. So the homepage and registration for that event is there, and you can go sign up as you wish. Let's see, another announcement, Sovereign Technical Governance Board is still evaluating and seeking nominees. So if that's something that you're interested in participating in, feel free to reach out to either myself or any of the other TGB members, and we can get you connected for that. For today's discussion, we'll go over as usual the different happenings from the various working groups throughout the industry. And then also in the later part of our call, Sam Smith and Juan Caballero are going to join us and give a presentation on CARI. So we look forward to that. They told me they would join in the later part of the call. So they're not on at the moment, but they should be here at the bottom of the hour. All right, so working groups. Did anyone happen to attend the main identity working group this week?
It focused on IoT. There was a presentation on IoT security enabled by MPC by Rebecca from Unbound Tech. There's a video and stuff like that. If folks are interested in that. But again, it was really focused on more of identity of things, let's say, as opposed to natural persons.
What was kind of the summary of her presentation? That's a big area with, let me say, billions of devices potentially available.
I don't want to do it injustice because that's not my focus, really. I didn't pay close enough attention to really formulate that type of opinion. For me, what I captured in my mind is what I came into the presentation. If you have a thing that's not like something that you could have embedded a serial number electronically, like a MAC address, you know, if it's a brick or an apple, like, you know, how do you, and you stick a barcode on it, well, how do you know that someone didn't swap that barcode? So I get, you know, you could track things and you could track shipments and stuff, but coming from the RFID world, I could swap transponders and you wouldn't know unless there's something genetically different that you could detect easily about that thing. That's what I found missing, that, you know, yeah, you could track serial numbers, you could track UPCs and do all sorts of things to secure that, but how do you know it was this apple that came from this farmer?
Yeah, that's a really big issue, is trying to figure that out. One of the main things about this is things are not live, obviously, and so there's no human to enter a passcode or a fingerprint or something like that. And so it really changes the dynamic of what identity and authentication mean. All right, well, I put the...
Well, one company years ago, I remember, was at a CAO, International Civil Aviation Organization conference, and their tech could look at a paper, like from a passport book, and uniquely, kind of like a fingerprint, as you said, uniquely identify the fibers in that document to the exclusion of all other documents. I was working on an FBI project that does the same for firearms, and we applied it to the Oklahoma City bombing case, where we had to prove that the drill bit in Terry Nichols' truck that was found, to the exclusion of all other drill bits, made the marks on the shed where the ammonium nitrate was stored. And we did it, and it was used in the court of law. But that is not something you could do in a supply chain where you got, you know, things flying down a conveyor belt. You know, this is a forensic analysis. And that's what I was looking for here, some sort of silver bullet that says I could, you know, identify this thing to the exclusion of all others. And that, yeah, anyhow.
Yeah, that's, yeah, it's an important area, and it's got a lot of challenges along with those opportunities.
Yep.
Let's see. Did anyone attend any of the Hyperledger ND working group calls this week?
We don't have the contributors call until next Tuesday, and that call will be a kickstart on what we're going to be discussing at the Interopathon, see if we can focus the topic. So I'm going to give a list of the topics we're going to talk about and pre-work for the Interopathon. So that's Tuesday at 8 Pacific. So same time as this, this coming Tuesday.
Excellent. I put a link on the meeting page. If you have a main homepage, maybe we could add that too. I try to update that link every time so that we have the previous set of meeting minutes on there. All right. Let's see. Anything else from Indy?
Yeah, one other thing on Indy is that we are preparing a release of Indy. And so Indy Node in particular. So Indy Node Plenum will be released as soon as possible. There's lots of chatter going on as we figure out how to do that and make sure we've got the process down. So that's underway. For those who use Sovereign, that will be published to Sovereign as quickly as we can get it out there. Going up through the usual BuilderNet, StagingNet, and then to MainNet.
Excellent. I have a note here that we've been talking about an update to Ubuntu 20. Is that part of this release, or is that a future release?
What we'll do is there's actually a pile of updates in a backlog that need to be released. That is not part of this one, but immediately upon completing this one, we will begin we'll prepare a subsequent release that we'll get out. This one has a deadline on it, so that's why we limit it to extremely small contents. And it also, as I say, is giving us a chance to really document exactly all the steps that go on to it. So much of it has been tribal knowledge, and so we're trying to get it all out there as to what the steps are. And so that'll lead us to the other ones. Now, I believe the 2004 that you mentioned, the work on that is not completely done. So that may not be part of it. We'll have to see on that. So basically, anyway. Details on the Indy contributors call. I won't go any further than that.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much for that update. And I have a link to the contributors meeting page there. So more details will unfold as they become available. Let's see. All right. Hyperledger Aries. Interesting discussions this week. Sam, do you want to give some updates there?
Yeah, your notes are fantastic, by the way, so I won't reiterate them. The one thing that I want to highlight from the B call yesterday was that we're trying to figure out the right way to increase the amount of trusted information available to the user when they make a decision. The two decisions that we're focusing on is one is accepting a connection or a contact, you know, creating a new contact with another individual. The second one is in the case where you're doing something like scanning a QR code that contains a presentation request, having some verified information about the person doing the requesting that you can present to the user as they're evaluating whether to satisfy that request or not. This is the referring back to the IoT discussion, that someone could swap out a transponder or a sticker. The issue here, let's say I'm like in a Subway sandwich line, and there's a thing that lets me scan it. And if I can prove that I'm a Subway valued member or something, then I get 5% off my order. Someone clever can replace the whole poster or even just the QR code portion of that and stick it over the top. And it looks like, you know, fine, because they probably needed to update the poster anyway. And now I'm serving that same request, but providing it to someone else. And so having an exchange prior to prompting the user that allows for information to be verified, so that at the time they're making the decision, they know who is actually making that request to at least some basic degree is what we're seeking on doing. And there's a few new things in there. We've the discussions around this topic have expanded goal codes, also machine readable governance frameworks, and then protocols to coordinate the accomplishment of a goal in a scenario where you don't know exactly who the other person is. I joke that this is the new did who dis problem, right? Playing off the new phone who dis, and the ability to just ask generally, for the other party to provide some sort of verifiable identifier that you can use to evaluate, but not knowing whether that is a person, a company, or an IoT device. So you need to provide generality of response so that those people can respond in a way that makes sense. And then that information can be evaluated according to the governance frameworks that you're prepared to evaluate it against. So that was a lot of words, but the goal that we're pursuing is increasing the amount of verified information that we present to a user when we ask them to make a decision about something. And there's a lot of little moving pieces that we need to understand clearly and figure out, but we're making really good progress on that. This is discussions that we've been having over the last several weeks, and we keep clarifying and getting both simpler and more precise about how we're going to accomplish that. So that recording has been posted.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah, I know that's really exciting. One of the hard parts of any system, really, but in particular security, is what we make the user do. And so anything that we can do to simplify that, to reduce the number of interaction steps is always welcome. Because if there's a button that says make me secure, most people will press it. But if there's an interchange of sign up and create and exchange and whatever the end users need to do, that's always really hard for them to want to tolerate all those interactions. And so simplifying that is great. Is there kind of a timeline for when that might is targeted to hit the streets, or I know it's new, but.
Yeah. So there's two phases here. We're still in the first phase, which is figuring it all out. And the next step for me is to do some additional writing on the topic to sort of propose some things, and then we can discuss and refine those. The second one will be implementing those. The what we have now basically relies on some self-asserted labels and some other things, and which doesn't provide. There's two flaws with that. One is it's not a super great user experience. There's not like a lot of information that can be shown on the accept screen, and it's also self-asserted, which means that it's very easy to create a phishing scenario where I convince you that I'm someone different than I really am simply because I can self-assert the name that someone else uses, in a non-verifiable way. So the phase of actually implementing that will be a little longer, and we need to make sure that we have a solid plan in place first. I'm hoping that, given that we're still fairly in the early days, that this is something we'll be able to get all of the major players to implement, and that will I think that will have a very positive effect for security and things. It's worth noting that we didn't do this first because there's kind of a lot to figure out. And we were trying to get the mechanical properties of DIDCOM working and agent messaging working at all. And we knowingly didn't solve this completely. One of the benefits of that is that there's a better tech that we have now. For example, we have you know, verifiable credentials exchange protocols that are working and functioning that we can now leverage to accomplish the things that we're trying to do. So, you know, when you're trying to invent a lot of stuff, sometimes it helps to come back around and then increase the features based on new features that we have now. So I can't really give a timeline. This is a piece of active discussion and something that is important. And so I will be continuing to write on that. And feedback is always appreciated and contributions along that vein. So I think the discussions will continue to happen at a fairly regular pace. And then as we settle on what it is, there'll be some evaluation of what this requires to actually implement in the timelines that are feasible. Given what needs to change. That was no squishy, Steve. You're looking for a good answer. I didn't give you one.
No, that's how these things go. The idea emerges and gets fleshed out for a while before, but a lot of times for a lot of us, the answer we're looking for is, when can I start coding on it? And I realize this is a little early, but I just wanted to ask the question anyway. I'm one of a smallish group of engineers that actually enjoys writing. So if you want some collaboration help on that, I'm happy to do that.
I totally will. And I'll try and make some noise when I've got some stuff out there.
Excellent. So I'll kind of wait and watch for that. But yeah, I'm happy to do that. Let's see. Do we have any updates on any of the shared libraries?
Things are moving forward on the shared libraries, looking like we're getting progress on, in particular, the storage. We got a brief demo the other day of importing a wallet from an indie wallet, which is what it called its storage, so an indie wallet into Aries storage, and being able to access all of the elements of that. So that allows us to take it there. The hope is that between indie VDR, indie shared util, which is likely to include the indie credex, and the Aries storage, that will be the foundation that we build any changes to coming out of the indie interopathon. So where we need to store objects with references out to multiple networks, it would be stored in that stack, if you will.
Okay, that's excellent. Would you mind if I asked a couple of questions? This is an area of interest for me. The wallet exchange between the Indie wallet and the Aries wallet. How did you go about that? Is there a key exchange protocol that's going on there, or is it a direct copy, or what? How does that work?
It's an export import. So you're exporting out of the existing wallet and then moving the objects, importing the objects, but putting it into a new structure so that they're useful in an Aries, which will be, you know, which will have broader broader usage. It'll enable more things than just indie underlying. So you're moving it from a constrained system into a broader system that can be used in multiple ways.
Okay. Yeah, that's exciting. I know that's one of the things we've talked about in SSI from the beginning, is this ability to go from this app, from that to that app, from this platform to that platform. And so it's really neat to see that start to materialize with more of a formal protocol.
to be clear on this, the Aries work is all being done in Rust, so it should be available for all Aries platforms, either via a wrapper, same as an FFI wrapper, same as Indy, or there's a couple of languages that have special bindings to Rust that allow sort of direct access to the objects, which will be an even tighter binding of that to the native language. So Python has a way to access Rust data without having to, copy it out, manipulate it, and put it back. So kind of cool stuff there.
Yeah, we've been toying around with that, and one of the issues we've been discussing is how we exchange private keys if you're doing a full wallet export import. Is that intermediary step going to be? I presume it's encrypted somehow. How does that part take place with the private keys?
Yeah, I believe it's all done using the standard Indy export process. So Indy will export a full wallet, an encrypted version of a full wallet, and then a key for the encryption. And then you would then provide that as a part of an import process into the Aries storage.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then
sense.
The private keys are all within that. And important ability is to be able to put them in all the right places within the Aries storage so that they're accessible and useful in an Aries context.
Okay, is there a document or a page where it describes that process if anybody wants to read on that more?
Not too much yet, coming okay. soon.
Hey, no, that's where the cutting edge is. It's great.
I know, this is true cutting edge. As I say, Andrew Whitehead is doing most of the work there, and he's doing things like even submitting PRs to underlie, he's building underlying Rust crates. He's also putting PRs into underlying Rust projects in order to get things working the way they need to be working. So he's doing a lot of layer debugging.
Excellent. Thank you for those details. I'll follow those along as well. We had some interest there. We've been exploring combining the wallets as like the Indy wallet as we use them today with different protocols, things like WebAuthn, and we have some research projects going on in university down in Australia where that's taking place. And so this notion of wallet import export stuff was a conversation we've been having this last week, and so that's why I took particular interest in that. All right, anybody attend the IRSA call this week or last week? Looking at the date, I did not, but I put the notes in the chat there. So I'll see if I can follow on with the chair of that group and see if we can get some more detailed updates. But their links are there. Trust Over IP Foundation. I've got some links here for the main site, main wiki. This week, this last, what was it? Yesterday, it's been a busy week. Yesterday was the steering committee meeting. There aren't any notes yet on the things that transpired in that meeting, but there is a Zoom recording that's been posted. Drummond usually chairs that meeting, and he's on a writing sabbatical this month, but he steps in to get all the important things done. So the recording of that meeting is there. Lots of updates on standard document formats, a lot of, I won't go through all of those details, but I put some very detailed notes in here about what's happening in each of the different working groups. And so I know they are onboarding many new members every week. LG has joined as a steering committee member. And so then there's a lot of other individuals and smaller companies that have also joined this week. And so if any of you on this call are interested in joining, the door is open. And each of those different working groups that I've listed there range from, you know, communications to operations to technical to different R&D levels and whatnot. And so there's something there for everyone to participate. And I think I put in all the recent meeting minutes from each of those working groups. If one of those stands out of interest, and then you can go there and take a peek. Let's see. On Sovereign, as I mentioned, TGB is still looking for nominees, and I put the last meeting minutes on there as well. I missed the last Steward Council meeting, so these are the previous set of notes. I'll have to get an update there. I was attending Black Hat and DEF CON this last week, and so virtually, of course. And so I wasn't able to attend that meeting. Let's see, any updates from the DIDCOM working group?
Just minor ones. Work is proceeding on finalizing the version 2-ized corrections for out of band. So the similar to version 1, but there's been some changes, of course, because of the changing dynamics and some of the baseline properties of DIDCOM version 2. So good discussions going on.
Excellent. I put some links in there to the proceedings as well, so you can get a lot more details. This out-of-band protocol is something that's really exciting for those who aren't aware of what it is. It's basically a way where you can connect to another user in some out-of-band method, like scanning a QR code or probably any of a variety of methods, but the protocol itself describes how you can make that communication happen securely, exchange keys, and so forth. So that's one of the really exciting things that's happening in the SSI world right now. Let's see. I hadn't heard of any standards activities. Did I miss anything that's going on? Sounds like we're all taking the summer break right now, so we'll have an update on that. So let's see. Now we have Juan Caballero. Did I say that correctly, Juan?
Yeah.
Excellent. So Juan is joining us to give a presentation and answer field questions on the carry protocol. I can't really do that justice at this point. So Juan, I'll let you take over.
To be honest, I'm plan B. I mean, Sam, I am not great at answering technical questions about carry. A lot of it goes over my head. I'm just sort of project managing it a little at DIF. Here I can try to share a little screen over here. I think it would take more time than is left in the hour to go through this slideshow thoroughly, but for anyone who wants to see it, I was just gonna show some slides from Sam's most recent slide deck about carry. Long story short, carry is the culmination of a lot of research Sam's been doing forever on self-certifying identifiers, and the key idea of carry is that the registration or the generation of new key pairs and identities in any given DID method could be reduced to a certain minimal form, like the bare basic information from a genesis event or a rotation event, and these receipts could be gathered into logs that could be either live entirely off chain like peer DIDs, or be sort of synchronized and replicated across like a cloud of witnesses that trust each other, and that could create a kind of fail-safe or security layer in between what we think of as the ledger of record and the identities themselves. So that's the best I can do at a one paragraph definition. So yeah, a lot of it has to do with this idea. I mean, it gets pretty esoteric, and I'm not a cryptographer or even a engineer or a developer, really. So a lot of it gets into this event-based thinking, or moving from files and documents to events, and it gets into some complicated stuff about ordering the events and which kinds of events need absolute ordering, like you get from a digital ledger. So the idea is, for everything that needs a ledger, you still use a ledger. But if you want a sort of carbon copy, a sort of backup that would block certain kinds of attacks or create a discrepancy that would then make other kinds of attacks detectable, or even just failures of the ledger or of the infrastructure there, it can be a sort of security fail-safe. So yeah, there's a lot of conceptual stuff here that I'm not even going to try to do justice to. But I think this contrast between the sort of status quo and the carry vision of an overlay secured version of status quo is important. And I think this is the basic justification for the complexity. Obviously, making a whole second consensus mechanism that sits on top of the ledger might seem crazy. but I think the idea is that it makes identifiers a little more independent from infrastructure and a little less vulnerable to infrastructural breakdowns. So maybe that's... very high level introduction. Any questions so far? Have I messed up the terminology or confused anyone already?
No, I think that's interesting. One of the things I was reading about carry is that it is disjoint from the ledger, and that's kind of what I was wondering about, was what does that mean? Is not the ledger our source of trust, and so how does carry change that for us?
Wow, okay, so that's a really good question, and I think that the ledger is still the root of trust, and I'm not sure if Oof. Okay. Well, that might be a Sam question. I may not be able to do justice to that one. But I think my understanding of this is that the ledger is still likely to be the authoritative source of record for lots of things. What this does is create a sort of a security overlay that might raise a red flag if anything goes fishy, and it also allows a little bit of, it facilitates portability, so you could, you know, rotate an identifier to a new ledger or a new infrastructure, which might come in handy if, you know, I don't know, that may be relevant to the sovereign interopathon 2 weeks, so that identifiers could move between the various sovereign ledgers. And in terms of identifiers could start in carry and then go onto the ledger if the, you know what I'm saying? Like peer dids can be upgraded to public dids. For those purposes, in terms of trust, I think the tricky part, or the, I think Sam's way of saying it is that the control of keys can be proven at the carry layer without needing to go to the blockchain for everything, so that some amount of traffic can be routed more quickly through the carry layer rather than having to confirm everything at the blockchain layer. And I'm not sure if that dodges your question at all, because I think it has to do with different levels of trust, right? So when you already trust a lot of things and you're not necessarily going down to the root layer for things, it can be a way to scale some of these, you know, sort of half a layer above layer one.
One, can I take a quick stab at it?
Please, please.
So to clarify, I'm the wrong Sam, and I cannot pretend to understand carry all the way through. So that's my new name badge, is the wrong Sam. So the fundamental difference I believe that carry does is that it turns a ledger from the witness to a witness. And mm-hmm. And what that means is that the continuity of witness that travels, you know, that carry enables is beyond any individual ledger, which gives it the portability one that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. But it also means because it's a witness and not the only witness, the ledger, I mean, a ledger can be a witness, is that any mishandling of the ledger can actually be detected because it's not the only witness anymore. And so there's all the portability advantages and everything else, but the key difference is that the ledger is a witness, not the witness. Just like, I guess, I'm a Sam and not the Sam.
Yeah, just to piggyback on that, as I understand it, networks of witnesses and validators can span multiple blockchains. So in a complex ecosystem or transactions that involve multiple chains, you could very well trust that cloud more than the least trusted of the chains involved.
you totally can. Well, so the other thing that's happening here is that carry is a fundamentally different way of thinking about how to do the stuff we've been trying to do with DID methods, in a way that allows DID methods to use it, but also gives us some superpowers that it didn't really have before. So for example, sometimes you have mixed scenarios where you have some stuff on a ledger, like with Sidetree, and then you have some stuff that will be on a ledger but isn't yet, but that you can pass along with assurance that it is in fact true. And carry is a really fantastic generalization of that concept, so that I might have some updates that aren't on the ledger yet, but because of the facilities of carry, you can trust it anyway, even though they're not yet on a ledger, or maybe never on a ledger, as the case may be, which is why you can start private and then publish on a ledger or not. There's a variety of scenarios there that are really, really powerful.
Yeah. well put.
Could I jump in for a minute?
Of course.
One of the things we're going to be, we will be talking about carry at the Indy Interopathon. I think I suspect I'm going to have a talk with Sam or try to have a talk with Sam before the Interopathon so we figure out how it might fit. Carry does represent a way that we could do interop because of exactly the traits you guys are talking about, which is that carry enables a portable identifier where a ledger becomes a witness versus the witness, and therefore the verification of that identifier and the control over that identifier is not specifically tied to the ledger and to one ledger. And so I think it's probably a bridge too far for Indy to go from what it has today to being based on carry, and I think carry's got to evolve a little further before that. But we do want to have that discussion as a big part of this to see, okay, what would it really take? How big is that effort to do that? I did post in the chat. Sam did a meetup webinar a while ago, and I put that in there. I found that a really good intro. To it. I read through the paper and it's that's posted above, and it's a doable, but it's a slog. It's tough to go through. The webinar obviously gives a nice balance between. I found good to go through both to try to get a pretty good idea, but it still doesn't get me all the way to, okay, here's how we're going to use it. That's not ingrained in me yet. And so,
sure.
I'm still working at that, but I think, if you're interested in this, for sure, the Indy Interopathon will have sessions on this.
Of course. Yeah. And I should clarify, as someone who's, going to all of those meetings, the roadmap is long. The goal is at the next IIW to have a laboratory prototype of direct mode, which is basically, peer-did mode, where two carry agents would basically just have mutual two-party recognition of each other's events, sort of a shared log of events that for the keys that two parties control, involving no ledgers, no witnesses, no cloud of validators watching the witnesses. I was trying to scroll through these pages here in the presentation to give a hint at how complicated the jump from peer-did mode to secure overlay mode. that's not going to be even a prototype in at the end of this year, I don't think. Our plan is to make the direct mode, demo it at IIW, and start working on implementing it with some cloud wallets, that the simplest possible cloud wallet first. and when this is ready for like Aries prime time, I can't say. Next year at the earliest. Hopefully that's not distressing to anyone.
No. I know Sam's been talking about this for a long time, and I think the last major presentation I saw on it was back at one of the Sovereign meetups in when everybody gathered in Provo. And so I'm trying to remember when that was. It's been a while. So this is a lot newer than what I've seen in the past. Those of you who are more familiar with this, Does this have any effect to Internet of Things, or is it more in person as we see in some of the diagrams here?
That's top secret. I can't tell you about that. I think it is very much so part of the drive to, you know, it's not about sidestepping the ledger. It's about having certain kinds of events not need to go all the way to the ledger, right? So non-web enabled IoT devices or non-blockchain connected IoT devices might be a strong candidate for use cases that would drive this. There's also like privacy, you know, there's privacy issues. Some things shouldn't be on a ledger. And then there's also just like technological, you know, sort of bandwidth or on-device computation limitations that would make the definitely Sam's IoT work and this work are related. while I'm thinking of it unrelated, there is also a lot of work lately on IoT devices doing other sorts of middleware between the device and the ledger that are maybe not so much based on event logging, but on other kinds of sort of like layer two solutions for getting IoT data onto blockchains. Some of that's happening in DIF. There's a company here in Germany called Slockit. I think I'm spelling it right. That might be of interest to people that need IoT solutions sooner than carry is going to be done. and I left it on this slide because one of the things that comes up a lot in discussions of carry is the consensus mechanism for the watchers and witnesses to make like a kind of cloud-like replication network. And there was just a discussion on the Slack channel for carry where a new DIF member was asking, why don't you just use an existing consensus mechanism? And I couldn't follow the conversation, went a little over my head, but people who are curious about the consensus mechanism for creating these shared logs, which are kind of like paraledgers, right? They're kind of like sidechains just for key management or for control of a DID versus usage of a DID. So that is another detail that I also can't really do justice to, but in all fairness, with this much time, Sam might not have gotten to it either.
Oh, no worries. Thank you for joining us today and giving us an overview of what carry's intended for and some good resources that we can follow. Thank you very much for that.
And maybe the way to structure this going forward would be when the agenda slows down, when you have a slow week, people could read these links, go a little further, and then you could have Sam on to answer the actually hard, the even harder questions that come up around design choices and performance and scale.
Oh, definitely so. Now, you mentioned that this is being discussed at one of the working groups in the DIF.
I misspoke. It's a work item of the Identifier and Discovery Working Group, which has separate meetings like a lot of work items do that are on a shorter timeline. The Decentralized Identity Foundation is now free to join for companies under 1,000 employees, but you still have to sign an IPR agreement. However, all of the code is being done live on GitHub. So if you have reasons not to want to sign the IPR agreement, you can't make substantial contributions or pull requests on GitHub, but you can follow along. You can listen in to the recordings of the meetings or even attend them if you promise not to break patent laws. it's housed at the Decentralized Identity Foundation. I'm also active in the interoperability working group there if people have any questions. That the interoperability working group does not require an IPR agreement. Anyone can just join.
You're a little more than just active in that group, Mr. Chair.
I'm now one of the chairs. only because a more popular person stepped out. Any other questions? Is this an hourly meeting? Did my time just end?
Yeah, we just go an hour, but thank you much for joining and for providing us with these resources. I've been hearing good things about Kerry, especially recently, although I haven't been involved. But I did, for those on the call, I did put a link to the DIF Identifiers and Discovery Working Group where Kerry is being discussed. So our company has joined the DIF as well. And so I will probably pop into that group so that I can learn more about it.
Oh, great.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for joining with us, Juan, and for giving us this overview. Thank you to each of you who contributed to the call today, and hopefully the information we discussed is valuable to you. We meet at this hour every 2 weeks, so our next meeting will be in 2 weeks' time. And thank you all for joining. Hope you have a great day.
Thanks, Carol.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.